Samaveda Bhakta. Okay, so I'll read the Sanskrit to this text and we'll do the word by word synonyms. Ramastam Mahapurushara Purishayana Akantasamaksham Asataparita Swavate Chaktatapasya Palamaja Jagupshitasya Jachami Kala Kivakartur Alangya Viryaha. So word by word synonyms. Ramaha. Lord Ramachandra. Tam unto him. Ravana. Aha. Said. Purusha adda Purisha. You are the stool of the man-eaters. Rakshasas. Yat. Because. Naha. My. Kanta. Wife. Asamaksham, helpless because of my absence. Asata, by you the most sinful. Apahrita, was kidnapped. Shvavat, like a dog who takes food from the kitchen. In the absence of the proprietor. Te of you. Chakta tapasya. Because you are shameless. Palam adya.
I shall give you the result today.
Jugupsitasya. Of you. The most abominable. Yachami. I shall punish you. Kala Iva, like death. Kartuhu, of you, who are the performer of all sinful activities. Alangya Viryaha, but I, being omnipotent, never fail in my attempt. So, translation. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, you are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog, for as a dog steals eatables from the kitchen in the absence of the householder, in my absence, you kidnap my wife, Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless today. Therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai. Nācha daivat param balam. No one can surpass the strength of the transcendence. Ravana was so sinful and shameless that he did not know what the result would be of kidnapping Mother Sita. The pleasure potency of Lord Ramchandra. This is the disqualification of the Rakshasas. Asacham apratishtam te jagat arhur anishvaram. That's from the Bhagavad Gita, 16 chapter, text 8. In other words, they think that there is no cause to anything and no Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Rakshasas are unaware that the Supreme Lord is the ruler of the creation. They think that everything has come about by chance or accident, and that there is no ruler, king, or controller. Therefore, the Rakshasas act independently, as they like, going even so far as to kidnap the goddess of fortune. This policy of Ravana's is extremely dangerous for the materialist. Indeed, it brings ruin to the materialistic civilization. Nonetheless, because atheists are Rakshasas, they dare to do things that are most abominable, and thus they are punished without fail. Religion consists of the orders of the Supreme Lord, and one who carries out these orders is religious. One who fails to carry out the Lord's orders is irreligious, and he is to be punished. Okay. So, Omagana Timidanda Shagaranjana Shilakaya. Chakshur unmiritam, yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we'll continue with our description. Of course, today we read about the killing of, or Ram's insult to Ravan just before he killed him. And the next verse in the Bhagavatam talks about how he struck him in the heart, which is the same as the Valmiki Ramayana's description. So, just a few words about what Prabhupada said about modern-day, you know, leaders and everything like that. And actually, we see that the problems in the world are due to people considering morality and ethics to be relative. Does everyone understand what that means? Relative means that according to time, place, and circumstance, you can change the laws of morality and ethics. I mean, for example, many years ago, abortion was illegal, and you get arrested. And nowadays, because of what's called PC, does everyone know what PC is? Political correctness. Even we as devotees have to be careful not to speak too politically incorrect. In some countries, you can actually get arrested if you say things that are politically incorrect. It's pretty hellish. So anyway, so because political correctness has changed, then, you know, abortion is legal. Basically everywhere is legal here in New Zealand. Yeah. And then you have, you know, different system, not to criticize anyone, but, you know, different systems of marriage, which I'm not going to get into the details about. And, you know, people not getting married even. So you see morality changing very, very quickly. I mean, just like we're doing this preaching program called Krishna West, and we're dealing with the boys and the girls of the universities. And basically, they're changing boyfriends and girlfriends almost every week. So part of our preaching has to be to console them when their boyfriend leaves them or their girlfriend leaves them. You know, it's probably 50% of our preaching activities. And it's on a weekly basis. You know, not even on a yearly basis like it used to happen. So things are diminishing gradually. So, but what's considered more, and if you tell them, even one person we were preaching to came up to, not me, but some of the ladies, and said, what contraceptives do you suggest in Krishna West? You know, so they're looking for advice about immorality. It's amazing, isn't it? So, in other words, because you don't have an objective moral standard, in other words, given by God, dharmam tu sakshat, Bhagavat Pranitam, therefore everything changes according to the society. I mean, like in the Rakshasa society, of course, they're eating human beings. In our Rakshasa society, they're eating their mother, the cow. So there's no concept of like a standard morality. And they don't consult Shastra, and they speculate. Even when they consult Shastra, they adjust things according to their own whims. So this is the problem, therefore, that they're like Rakshasas. And modern society will fall apart because of that, because of this. And you see, if you examine the history of the world of different societies, let's take, you know, Greece or Greek society. They basically fell apart when immorality became more and more prominent. Practically every society is like that. It first starts out, you know, of course, not moral principles according to the Vedas, but at least they have some moral principles. And then as the moral principles, at least any moral principles, get thrown out, you know, everything is relative, then at that particular point, the society starts to fall apart, you know, either disintegrates or it's attacked from the outside. So we see that happening basically in the Western world and, of course, in India and in China, actually all over the world. I can't think of anywhere where it's not occurring at this particular point. Maybe Fiji. Not really. So anyway, so that was Prabhupada's comment there, this, you know, bound for destruction. So let's continue with our narration. So here we see Ravan has been killed. And so basically Vibhishan, as I mentioned before, was lamenting upon the death of his brother and he didn't want to accept the kingdom. But Ram convinces him to do the funeral ceremony for his brother who just died. And then Ram, because he's not able to enter the city of Ravana's city, he can't do the coronation. And so he has to have Lakshman do that. Then he sends Hanuman to get Sita Devi. And Hanuman is completely overjoyed. Sita is completely overjoyed. And Hanuman actually feels very vengeful towards the Rakshasinis who have been torturing Sita Devi. And he says, I'm going to kill them all for you. And she says, no, they were simply following orders. Sounds like the Nazis in World War II. She says, it is my karma. Wow. Imagine. She actually says, it is my karma. Of course, Sita Devi is the goddess of fortune. Of course, it's Maya Sita at this point. But still, there's no karma. And that shows a devotee's attitude. As mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Tate Nukam Tvam, Shudushu Mikshamanam Bhunjanibat Makratam Vipakam. Ridbhag Bapurvir Vidadam Namaste Jiveta Yo Mukti Pude Sadayabhak. If something happens to us, if someone else does something to us, or some unfortunate accident, we don't blame Krishna. We think, oh, it's due to the resultant reactions of my past sinful activities. And, in addition, we go on serving Krishna with our body, mind, and words. Ridbhag Bapurvir Vidadam Namaste Jiveta. And then, it said in the Bhagavatam, then one becomes a rightful recipient or inheritor of pure devotional service. Very important verse. And so, anyway, so Sita Devi is showing that. And also part of devotional service is being merciful, even to the people who attack you. I mean, you see that in the case of Haridas Thakur. You see that in the case of many great Vaishnavas, Jesus Christ. And Sita Devi is exhibiting that same mood. And you see that's in the Mahabharat with Draupadi, that her sons were killed. Can you imagine, you ladies, if your sons or daughters were killed by someone, would you say, yo, be kind to them? Modern justice is based to a certain extent upon retribution, which is actually in the mode of ignorance. Retribution means you get even with someone. You know, someone is a murderer, for example. And of course, in America, they have capital punishment. Here, I don't think you have capital punishment. You just punish someone by keeping them in jail before their court case for 10 million years, right? In America, at least, we're assured a swift trial. That's actually part of our constitutional rights. So, anyway, so let's say someone is condemned to death because of capital punishment. Then the family that was hurt by, you know, having a family member killed will camp outside the prison, along with probably several thousand other people. They will do something called tailgating. I don't know if you know what tailgating is. What is tailgating? Tailgating doesn't mean following someone very closely. It means you go to some sort of like party and you take the tailgate of your truck, pickup truck, because in America pickup trucks are very popular. And you just drink beer. And you play loud nonsense music. So they camp outside the prison, and as soon as they hear the person's died, they just like jump up in ecstasy. Because that's called retribution, or getting even. And actually what that does is it actually pollutes the heart of the person who's thinking like that. Because when you have anger, it can cause physical, physiological problems, as well as spiritual problems. So a devotee is not like that. He's always forgiving. That's one of the qualities of a Brahmin. He's ready to forgive in any instance. So anyway, so this is Sita's quality. She's ready to forgive. She says, no one is beyond doing something evil. Wow, really empathic here, you know. Everyone makes mistakes. Wow. Just think of that compassion. In other words, it's like almost like that course I taught in empathic communication. I don't know if you've seen that or heard about it. That you understand that everybody is acting according to their own judgment to fulfill their own particular needs. And these Rakshasas were just ordered to do it. They made a mistake, you know. So, no problem. Then she says, I'd like to see Ram. Hanuman returns to Ram and says, Sita really wants to see you. And Ram is crying at that particular point. Ram says, okay, get Sita, but first she has to bathe and put on her jewels and dress nicely. You know, so he's putting some conditions, but you'll hear the later conditions, which I think most of you know. Anyway, so he says, first do that. But she wants to see him immediately, but still she follows his orders. And she's carried in a palanquin to see Ram. Now, this actually is explained in the Valmiki Ramayana, it's the Rakshasas who were carrying the palanquin. She's so forgiving, she's allowing Rakshasas to carry her. And Ram, at this point, you know, everybody's observing, Ram has mixed moods. He's happy, sad, depressed, angry. And as she's coming closer, all the monkeys and Rakshasas want to see her because they want to see who this war was fought for. At that time, they didn't have, like, internet connections. So Ram could post a picture of her on Facebook or something like that. So Bibhishan was chastising everybody because they wanted to see her. But Ram chastises Bibhishan. He says, tell him to treat people kindly. These are your citizens now. Let people see her. So Sita covers herself with a cloth and looks at Ram's face. And Ram says to her, she's very heavy in the Valmiki Ramayana. He gets really angry with her and says, Madam, not Sita, Madam. You can actually tell someone's mood by how they address you. They could say that person. Or even, of course, in sophisticated languages like Hindi or Spanish or Sanskrit, you know, there's a intimate you, and then there's a formal you. So obviously, with your wife, you're not going to use a formal you. In English, there used to be one called thou. You understand? But we don't use that at all. We don't say thou. What dost thou want?
Shakespearean language.
Yeah, the Shakespearean language. That's the traditional formal you in English. And it was used, actually, in England. Thou. Like if I said that to Krishna Chandra. What does thou want? Thou want? Where is thou going to send us today? It's just weird. So Ram was addressing Sita like that. He said, hey, madam, I did my duty. We didn't fight the war to get you, but to save my honor. Wow. You know, and it's explained in the Valmiki Ramayana, he was very harsh about it. Not just like nonchalant. He said, we didn't fight the war to get you, but I fought to save my honor. Sita's crying. And then Ram says, your sight is very disagreeable. Doesn't say like that in the Tulsi Das Ramayana, no. Doesn't get into those details because it's really heavy. Of course, it's Maya Sita and it's a play, you know, obviously. Therefore, you can go wherever you like. I have no use for you. No use. Because it was using, like in Hindi, it would be up. Yeah. You can marry someone else. This is Valmiki Ramayana. Intense. Perhaps Lakshman. Perhaps Sugriva. Perhaps Vibhishan. Wow. Poor lady. Sita, of course, is crying at this point. How can you say this? You're acting like a common man. She sort of chastises. And then Sita tells Lakshman to build a funeral pyre. Ram says, that's a good idea. And Sita, shoo, what a heavy pastime. Of course, we understand they're acting. Sita will join Ram later on. I think the heavier one is when Sita enters into the earth than this particular pastime. So Sita circumambulates Ram and says, may fire attest to my chastity. And she walks into the fire and everyone is scared. And all the demigods, they don't even know what's happening. This is what's hidden from them. Shiva, Brahma, etc. They start accusing Ram. He says, how can you do this? And they actually tell Ram who he actually is. He said, you know, you're Vishnu, and she's Lakshmi. And Ram says, you know, I don't know this stuff. Amazing, isn't it? It's like someone calling, you know, any of us Vishnu. I say, what? What kind of stupid thing is that? I'm not Vishnu. So Ram was actually thinking like that under the influence of his Yogamaya potency. Then Sita comes from the fire, and the fire god is with her, and he attests to her piety. And the fire god said, I'm not going to accept any word that criticizes Sita. You better be quiet, Ram. So he gets chastised by the fire god, because obviously it's more important to support Sita than to support Ram. In other words, for you ladies, Sita is more important than Ram. So, of course, they're never separated. I understand that. She's more merciful than Ram, just like Srimati Radharani is more merciful than Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna wants to be merciful, or more merciful, he takes the mood of Srimati Radharani. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, so the fire god says, I'm not going to accept any word criticizing Sita Devi. You must accept her back. And the fire god says, go back to Ayodhya, have a family, you know, gives Ram instructions at this point, do a horse sacrifice. Then King Dasarath appears. Also in the movie it was like that too. On a heavenly chariot, and he speaks. You know, he's up in the air. He says, do not do something like... He's chastising Ram. He said, don't act like Kaikeyi. So poor Ram at this point doesn't even know what's happening. You know, because he's under Yogamaya. And then Ram talks to his father. He says, okay, I accept that. But you must forgive Kaikeyi and Bharata. And so Dasarath agrees, okay, that's a deal. And so he rescinds his rejection, because previously he said, Kaikeyi is not my wife anymore, Bharata is not my son anymore. And so he actually changed that. And then Dasarath gives some preaching to Lakshman and instructs Sita, don't be upset. Of course, I mean, the real Sita has now come out, because the fire god, and Ram knew this, the fire god had previously taken the Maya Sita. And then Indra comes and says, Ram, I'm very pleased with your activities. Please ask for a boon. And Ram says, please let all the monkeys and bears that fought with me come back to life. They should have good food and health, and they all come back to life as if waking up from a deep sleep. Nice, isn't it? The Valmiki Ramayana is quite sweet. And sometimes heavy. Very, very sweet. And all the gods there, you know, the demigods, they say to Ram, go back to Ayodhya, please your mothers and Bharata, and all the gods leave. And then so Ram, he rests for the night, and then he's offered opulent bath by Vibhishan, but then he remembers that Bharat had taken a vow that if Ram didn't return on the very second his vanvas was over, Bharat was going to commit suicide, enter into the fire. So he thinks, I better get back right away. This guy is impetuous, you know, he's going to throw himself into the fire. Vibhishan says, you know, please stay longer, but Ram has complete anxiety about his younger brother. So Vibhishan says, oh, okay, you can have my car. And at this... You can borrow my car. So at this point, the car is actually the pushpaka, because he got that from Ravan. So this aerial car comes, and this car was made by Vishwakarma. There's a whole wonderful description there of this aerial car. And of course, they're flying back to Ayodhya. And on the way back, Ram wants to stop at Shringera to see Guha. And so he sends Hanuman ahead. Hanuman flies because what's happening is Bharat is circumambulating the fire at this time, getting ready to commit a suicide. So Hanuman comes and... of course, in the movie, they have different things. But Hanuman comes and stops Bharat. And Bharat waits patiently for Ram. Ram is talking to Guha. You know, he was a Nishada friend who attended the Gurukul with him. So anyway, so that's the story. So Ram returns, and then this coronation. So that's nice. And then, so there's other stories we can tell here. I'm not going to go through the continuation of the Ramayana where, you know, Ram has Sita enter because he insults her again. She enters the earth. It's too heavy for me. And a Lavankush story. But in any case, Ram ruled the kingdom, and mostly without Sita Devi, for the next 60,000 years. And then when it came time... and I told the story yesterday about how he sent Lakshman away. That's heavy. Did you all hear that story? Yeah, you all know that story, so I'm not going to tell that again. So let's tell the story about Mahi Ravana, because you asked about that yesterday. So Mahi Ravana was like a brother, a half-brother of Ravan, and he lived in Brazil, according to Prabhupada. That's not my opinion. So what happened is when the... monkeys and Ram and everyone were camped there. It's described that Hanuman made a fort to protect Ram and Lakshman, and he made a fort with his tail. He had an extendable tail. It can be extended like up to 25,000 kilometers if he wanted. And there's actually more stories about Hanuman's tail. So, and also when he set fire to Lanka, he extended his tail. That's why he was able to set fire to all the houses and everything like that. So anyway, so he made a fort from his tail, with his tail. And the only way you could get into the fort was going through Hanuman's ear. So, you didn't hear that one before? Anyway, something new for you. So, Mahi Ravana, what happened is that Mahi Ravana first sent one of his... associates and one of his servants to try to kidnap Ram and Lakshman. And what happened is the associates sort of pulled apart two of the rings of the tail, you know, because it was in rings. And he stuck his head in, and there were guards inside, and so they cut off his nose and ears and everything like that. And so he comes back to Mahi Ravana and said, Mahi Ravana, I couldn't do it. You know, it looks hellish. And so Mahi Ravana says, this is a job for me. So Mahi Ravana... takes the form of Vibhishan. And he says, you know, I want to check on Ram and Lakshman. So he enters into this fort, and he kidnaps Ram and Lakshman while they're sleeping. He puts them sort of in a trance so they don't wake up. And he enters into this tunnel to Brazil, which is controlled by pneumatic force. Just like in the bank sometimes, you have this pneumatic... You don't have that here, like drive-up windows where you... No, you don't have that. You don't have... You don't have drive-up windows in the bank?
We have.
Where you put a tube, something in a tube, and then gets sucked up. You never saw that?
No.
Where have you been living?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes up and out like a tube. And many offices, they have that to send messages. Before they had email, they used it quite a bit. So anyway, so Mahi Ravana goes there, and it's described that Mahi Ravana's life is in different places. It's in a diamond, and the other half is in the Himalayas. And you have to do three things at once. And there's five flames in the Himalayas that have to be extinguished to kill Mahi Ravana. So the three things at once had to be done simultaneously. That means at once to kill Mahi Ravana. You have to hit him in the chest, you know, kill him in the chest, break the diamond, and extinguish the five flames. Kind of hard to kill a guy. So I guess that was also a benediction from the demigods. So he was thinking, let me offer Ram and Lakshman into the fire, I guess to Durga or some other demigod. And Mahi Ravana Let's see. Let's continue with the study. Okay. So anyway, Hanuman was trying to find Ram and Lakshman. And he went there. Actually, he tried to enter into the tunnel. And he was thinking, how am I going to go through this long tunnel? And then the wind god reminded him, Vayu, reminded him that you're my son. You function by wind. So he went whoosh, through the tunnel. And after he came out of the tunnel, he killed all the soldiers that were surrounding the tunnel with a tree. So he just smashed them all. And then there were different walls to different sections of Mahiravana's kingdom. And I think there were about 7 or something. I forget the exact number. So the final wall, there was actually a guard there. Not only that, there was some sort of electronic device. Did you ever hear this before? That detected if anyone was the enemy of Mahiravana. So Hanuman, Mahiravana's sister was bringing some water or something into Mahiravana for his sacrifice. And so Hanuman made himself very tiny, and he was on a leaf on the water. So when he entered that particular section, this device, the alarm started going off. So then Hanuman, he actually just expanded himself and used his tail to kill all of Mahiravana's soldiers. So they were just sitting down in their houses eating food, and a tail came into their house. So he just extended it. That's like, just sitting there, and some tail comes and just wraps around you like a python. And grabs you out of your house. Not the women, Rakshasas, just the men. He was kind to the ladies. And so then he starts to attack Mahiravana, and basically he passes urine on the yajna of Mahiravana. So then what happens is that Mahiravana is getting ready. Let's see. Oh, yeah, so Hanuman knows that the lamp has to be extinguished. Mahiravana somehow or other escapes. He's getting ready at midnight to offer Ram and Lakshman to the goddess Kali. So Hanuman goes to this place, I guess it's in the Himalayas, where the lamps are, guarded by snakes. And he sort of eats the snakes. And they time the whole thing. So the Mahiravana says to Ram and Lakshman, please offer your obeisances to the goddess before we kill you, before we offer you to the goddess. And Ram says, I am a king. I don't know how to offer obeisance. Can you show me? So at the same time, he offers obeisances. Lakshman goes and destroys this diamond. Hanuman puts out the lamps. And Rama, strikes him in the chest. So Mahiravana dies. And actually the word in Sanskrit, Mahi, means earth. And sometimes it's called Ahiravana. You might have heard that term, Ahi or Mahi Ravana. Okay, that's one other story. That's the Valmiki Ramayana, part. Here's another one. This is actually a story, one of my favorites. Once upon a time, Lakshman, because everyone, every citizen in Ram Raj had a right to talk to Ram at a certain time, not all night long. So once upon a time, a dog came to the gate. You heard this story, but it's a really funny story. I like it. And the dog, Lakshman saw the dog, and the dog said, I have a complaint to make. And the dog came in and sat before Ram. Hari Bol, good to see you. And Hari Krishna Jo, good to see you. And the dog said, there's this Brahmin, his name is Saravata Siddha. He's been beating me. So even the dogs had a right there to make a complaint. So the king would pass judgment. It's not that you, like nowadays, you have to hire lawyers. Sorry about that. but you had a king who was advised by Brahmins. And the Brahmins could actually see the truth. You know, very, very intelligent kings who were just interested in justice. So anyway, so they brought this, the Brahmin in, and the Brahmin said, the reason I beat the dog is I was hungry. And he was on my path as I was getting food. And the sages said the Brahmana should be punished because of this. And how should we punish him? So the sages had this whole discussion. How to punish the Brahmin. What's the appropriate punishment? And Lord Brahma said, ask the dog. And the dog said he should be made temple president. Of course, it says in the Ramayana, acharya of the monastery. But I'm just putting in more modern terms, which means like temple president. And everyone gets bewildered and says, why is the dog saying that? You're rewarding someone for beating you? You know, what's the problem here? And then the dog explains, Ram says, you know, ask the dog. And so they ask the dog, you know, why are you asking for this reward? And the dog said, it's not a reward, because my last life, I was the acharya or the temple president, and I made a little fault. And because of that, I became a dog. And that, and then the, after that, the dog fasted and went back to home, back to Godhead. That's an interesting story, isn't it? So here's another story. I'm Ram Raj. This is a story of the Shudra's austerities. Once upon a time, there was a Brahmana's son who died. And he went to Ram and said, you must bring back my son, or myself and my wife will fast until death. Because at the time of Ram Raj, no person died prematurely. People died. But never a son would die before the father. That's considered very inauspicious. And people that really, really didn't get sick, they just died when they wanted to, when it was time to go back to Godhead. Because obviously, if you die in Ram Raj, you go back to Godhead. Because Ram's there. So, Narada Muni came and he said, the reason for the son dying is that there was someone unqualified who was doing sacrifices. Actually, there's Vedic injunctions that that unless someone is actually qualified as a Brahmin, and qualified as a Brahmin means by quality, not by birth, then should not be taught the Vedic literatures. And I've actually seen, even in, in ISKCON, unless someone has knowledge of Sambandha Gyan, which means basically who Krishna is, what the material world is, what time is, what karma is, all these different factors, that's Sambandha, basic knowledge, then if they're presented with something higher, they become sahajas, in other words, take things cheaply, or pervert religion. And it's happened within our society when people don't get proper knowledge. So basic knowledge is important. So anyway, so this Shudra, or person who wasn't qualified, was doing austerities. And he was actually upside down doing austerities. And Ram went to his hermitage and cut the Shudra's head off. And the Shudra's name was Shambhukta. And then Indra came and brought the Brahmin's son back to life. There's a happy ending to this story. Let's see, I'm not going to talk about Sita's banning. That's too heavy for me to talk about. That may be all I want to talk about today. Oh, yeah. I already talked about the birth of Ravan, so I don't need to talk about that again. I think we told most of the important stories, and we don't have much time today. And so any questions or comments about any of these points?
You should put all the monkeys back to life.
Yeah, and bears.
And you have the power to revive a dead person.
The demigods do. The demigods do. Was actually, I mean, Ram certainly does. He's God. But acting as a king, a human king, he didn't manifest that power. So we had the demigods do that.
What happened to the Rakshasas who died?
What happened to the Rakshasas who died? They got liberated. But they didn't necessarily go back to Godhead. They actually, not all of them, some of them might. I mean, Ravana, of course, was a great devotee. Kumbhakarna was a great devotee. So obviously they attained Krishna consciousness after another birth. They became Jagai and Madai after the next birth. So, any other questions? I mean, there's other stories here that are told in the Ramayana, such as the story of the King Sagara and how the oceans were created and everything. So you have a question? Yeah.
So all the water and all the oceans is Ganga, is it?
Yeah, originally, yes.
So now it's not.
Well, the Ganga is mixed with all the water and all the oceans because the Ganges enters the ocean. You know, Ganga Sagara enters the ocean and it mixes. All the waters mix, obviously, because all the oceans are connected. But I can tell that story. That's an interesting story. Once upon a time, there was a king, Sagara. He was a king of Ayodhya, and he had two wives, Keshini and Sumati. Mm. And Sumati had 60,000 sons. So quite a bit. Don't ask me how it happened. Keshini had one son who was known Asa Manja, who was violent. And so he was kicked out. So one of the wives had a bad son, the other one had 60,000 sons. And his son, the son of this guy who was kicked out, was named Om Shuman. And he was a nice guy. So King Sagara did a horse sacrifice. And the horse, in those days, the horse sacrifice means that when they sacrifice the horse is brought back to life. You know, it's not that you just killed animals. But the brahmanas were so powerful that the horse actually took a human body after that. So anyway, but this horse was stolen before the sacrifice. So 60,000 sons looked for the horse. And they went to this place called Rasatala. And in Rasatala, there was an incarnation of Krishna known as Lord Kapiladev meditating. So they blamed Kapiladev for stealing the horse. And because they blamed Kapiladev for stealing the horse, their bodies self-immolated. Now, some of you hear the story that Kapiladev burned them in ashes. Not true, because he wouldn't do that. But they were so offensive, the offensiveness actually burnt them to ashes. Anyway, so then Sagara orders Amshuman, his grandson, to get the horse. And then he goes and gets the horse. And then after that, he gets the horse. And he offers obeisances to Lord Kapiladev. But he sees his 60,000 uncles' bodies there, you know, just the skulls and everything. He thinks, how can I liberate them? How can I help them? So the only way to help them is just to pour Ganges water on them. So then he does austerities for 1,000 years to bring the Ganges there and doesn't come. So he dies. And then he had a son named Dilipa who did 1,000 years of austerities and he dies. And then finally the next son, the son of Dilipa, his name is Bhagirath. And he does all of his austerities standing on one toe. And the Ganges agrees to come, but she says, I have several conditions. First of all, if I come directly to the Earth planet, then I'm going to split the Earth. And then he said, well, okay, we can arrange for Lord Shiva to block your momentum. Okay, fine. And then she says, but I got another bigger problem, that if I come down to the Earth planet, all these fools and rascals are going to bathe in me. And, you know, it's not that they just clean their bodies, but I get all their karma. It's like the guru, you know, when you initiate, you don't get all the karma. That would be a disaster. But you get, I mean, oh, my God, it'd be a disaster. You know, so you get a remnant of their karma. In other words, you get may get a bad dream or some little sickness or something like that. So it's a dangerous occupation. It's one of the most hazardous occupations. You have to take out hazardous insurance policies. They have hazard insurance here. Yeah. If you work, you know, like if you work in electrical wires or something like that. So anyway, so the Ganges complained about that, and he said, I have a remedy for that too. And the remedy is that the sages, the pure devotees, will also bathe in you, and they will purify you. And that's true. So then Bhagirath propitiates Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva stands there, and the Ganges comes down. But the Ganges is thinking, you know, Lord Shiva, he can't stop me. And Lord Shiva becomes very angry at the Ganges for her pride, and he traps her in his hair. And so Bhagirath does more austerities to release the Ganges, and the Ganges is released into seven streams. There's actually seven different branches of the Ganges. And the Ganges is sometimes called Bhagirathi. And so then seven streams, and then as one of the streams is coming out, this sage is meditating, and this big wall of water is coming to him. And so what he does, he gets really angry, he drinks the whole Ganges. His name is Janu, the sage Janu. And then Bhagirath prays to him again, and the Ganges comes out. And therefore the Ganges is called the Janavi sometimes, because it came from the sage Janu. And then the water washes the sons of Sagara, 60,000 sons, and they go to heaven. Pretty good. So if you want to go to heaven, you can be a nonsense your whole life and then just take a bath in the Ganges. No, it doesn't work like that. Anyway, but even they go to heaven, so let's talk about heaven for a second. It's temporary. It's not permanent. It's not they went back to Godhead. Because the Bhagirath did the duty of what's called a putra, and it's saving his ancestors from hell. A putra means son, but it actually means someone who saves his ancestors, father, mother, grandfather, great-grandfather, from hell by doing something called pinda. It's like in Fiji you have the shrad ceremony, which is applied in an improper way. Sometimes in Fiji, with the shrad ceremony I've seen, they want to put out the things that the person liked the most. So they put a plate and they put cigarettes and alcohol on the plate, and kava. Can you imagine that? The poor guy is probably in hell because he drank kava. And then you're giving him more kava to drink. Pretty stupid. So there is the shrad ceremony, and that ceremony is only done by brahmanas. It requires a lot of different rituals which you probably don't do in Fiji properly. Like, for example, the son has to change the Brahmin thread from one side to the other, and then you have to feed the best of the brahmanas, which means devotees. Like Advaitacharya did this shrad ceremony, and he fed Haridas Thakur, who he considered the best of the brahmanas because he was the best Vaishnava. So anyway, so we have a duty. Anyway, we have a duty to our ancestors, mother, father. If we perform devotional service, we can save them from hell and actually give them an opportunity to perform devotional service. So any questions or comments?
I have a question about this liberation of the family. We liberate our stepfathers and stepsisters.
Stepfathers? If they're, are they wicked stepsisters and stepmothers? Like that, was that Cinderella story? So, I think anyone who is connected with you that you think of and love. Yeah. By your good wishes. I mean, obviously, it has to be based upon a devotee's wishes.
So we have to wish.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that you just think, he'll get liberated even though I hate his guts, you know. It's not like that. A devotee's wishes can liberate someone. So it's actually based on the desire of a devotee. Because if you're not wishing that, the person doesn't get liberated.
So if for example, and he still wishes them to be liberated.
Several wives.
There was one wife, and then, the worst.
Oh, serial wives.
And then another.
Parallel or serial?
Serial.
You know, in modern society, they do allow polygamy. It's called serial polygamy. Isn't it? So which is worse, serial or parallel? You figure it out. So anyway, what's the question?
Do they still get the benefit?
If he has many wives? So maybe it's good to marry many wives so they all get the benefit or something. I mean, look at King Henry VIII. He probably benefited so many. He made his own religion, the Anglican Church. So he could benefit and even kill some of his wives if they got liberated. No, I'm just joking. I think it's the devotee's well wishes. And of course, if you're actually a devotee, you'll wish well to everyone. You won't have any enemies. Even if someone hurt you, like Jesus Christ, he said, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do. So he was, quality of a devotee is very forgiving. He's never vengeful. What? Yeah, tadikshava purunika. Or he's not retributive. He doesn't try to get retribution. He believes in restorative justice, not retributive justice. Isn't it? Retributive means suffer, and you get joy from it. Restore means you want them to come to the right platform. So that's our philosophy, restorative justice, and in which we pray for everybody, our enemies. One way we can chant better is we can chant and pray for our enemies, or people who think they're our enemies. We don't have any enemies. Our real enemies are lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. These are our enemies. The person is not our enemy, What?
The real terrorist.
Yeah, the real terrorist. That's the real jihad, so to speak. You got to fight those people inside, or those tendencies inside. Okay, I think we have to end because we have a big day. Krishna Chandra is going to torture us again for another day.